And good morning, folks, and welcome to Coffee with Radio Ranch Wranglers here on the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network. We're coming to you live this morning, September 27th, 2025. We'll be right back after this song.
Now we can see a new world coming into view. A world in which there is the very real prospect of a new world order.
The new world order does not mean surrendering our national sovereignty or forfeiting our interests.
Good morning. Welcome back to Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers here on the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network. We're coming to you this morning, September 27th, 2025. It's hard to believe. I don't know exactly how that just happened. But we'll bring the men on the line. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
And good morning, Will.
Good morning.
And Tim, why don't you start us off with a word of prayer this morning?
Dear Lord and Heavenly Father, we just thank you for another opportunity to serve you, Lord, another day. We know that each one is a gift and that you have a plan and a purpose for your people and for all that goes on in the world, Lord. We look about us sometimes and see more questions than we know what to do with, but we know that we have an answer, man, that he's got it well in hand, Lord. We just thank you for that. I pray, Lord, that you would bless your people, your servants, all across this land, Lord, there are many. I pray that you would grant them purpose, that you would grant them protection, and, Lord, that you would just grant them productivity and the ability to provide for their families, for the people that they are serving. Lord, I ask that you would grant that this broadcast this morning would be a light in a dark place, Lord, that it would shine the light of your truth upon things that are going on, that it would make those that are asleep awaken, and Lord, that it would help your people to seek your face and ask questions and become aware of what's going on around them, and to give you the honor and the glory for just all the protections and all of things that you give us in the midst of this war that has been going on for a very long time. But Lord, we thank you for the victory, too. We thank you that it's already won. And we ask all these things in Christ's name. Amen.
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 Well, I just wanted to start off real quick with talking a little bit about the prayer chain. I've been working on that, redoing that, trying to make that user-friendly to people. And encourage people, if you want to sign up, we've got a prayer chain. When we get prayer requests during the week, we put them together in an email and we send those out. You can also go to our website and there's a link at scriptures4america.org that you can click there, and it says prayer requests. And you can click there, you can send it right there anonymously. But it is a good way of, getting basically your, what you're struggling with, what you're going through. If you know somebody that's in need of prayer, and there's a lot of different subjects that, that we cover. But I mean, we've had a lot of prayer requests recently for, people that are in need of healing, people that are going through a surgery, people that are going through divorce, people that, have a piece of property that they're trying to sell. There's nothing too great nor too small for our Heavenly Father to do. And just want to encourage people to take advantage of that. That's we do the Wednesday night prayer meeting. That's your program. That's for us to be able to get a chance to pray for the needs of the saints. And I just want to push that. There's a lot of people that aren't familiar with that program. Also, I want people to, sign up to, receive those prayer requests when we get them. I don't send them out. I got two different lists. We got a list that we send the Dragon Slayer newsletter magazine out to on an email, and then we've got prayer requests. And if you haven't signed up for the prayer request list, you're probably not on there. So make sure and let me know. You can shoot an email to preacher@sfaw.org or jason@sfaw.org. Either one works. But you can send an email and just say, sign me up for prayers. There's been, we do send out our Sunday morning bulletin, and, I just got another request for that to be added onto that yesterday as well. So that was good. Wanted to put a plug in there for that. I think it's a very powerful tool that, we need to take advantage of and we need to use. So just wanted to, make sure and let people know about that.
Wow.
Amen.
Amen.
And I don't know. I'll turn it over to you, man. Where do you want to start off with? Everybody stock at once. Well, I seen a headline that I think that's probably worth starting off with. Germany prepares to treat 1,000 injured soldiers in a day in war with Russia. And I didn't get a chance to look into this one very much, but it sure looked interesting.
I think it bears talking about. What was it, a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we talked about France gave out the same information, didn't they? That they said that they were calling all. When was it, Tim? Was it March of next year that they had to be prepared?
Yeah, it was. It was after the first of the year there. At some point, they were. That was their
all the hospitals and everything had to be upgraded.
They had to be prepared to. Go ahead, Tim.
I think England had kind of came out with the same thing, too. I mean, they were making some noise about a bunch of hospital beds. So, yeah, that's a lot. 1,000 per day, that's 30,000 a month. I mean, how long did that go on? So, yeah.
That's a lot of Germans.
Yes. Yeah, Germany's not really a very big country.
Right.
So. The problem is, as Americans, we tend to judge all other countries according to our land mass and our, you know, population density and everything. And it's like there's some of these countries that we talk about, if you really look into it, they're not really that big. I mean, some of them are even almost what we would consider state size. You know, I mean, it's like, wow. So as far as people and places, so 1,000 a day is a lot. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that ties into this here. I mean, basically they're talking, I think it was, I read somewhere that they have like 440,000 beds in Germany in hospitals. That's what they're talking about, an additional 1,000. And they're talking about using trains and how to move soldiers to the front. So they're not just talking about treating 1,000 soldiers, they're talking about logistics too. I mean, that's a lot of injuries and a lot of infrastructure in place to try to move them from where. I have no idea, but it's interesting, isn't it?
It is interesting. Reading through some of the articles dealing with this, and I don't know. This is what came to my mind. They're likening a lot of this. Germany is, you know, several times through one article that I was reading, it was talking about how the German defense minister and I guess their equivalent of what is now our War Department was saying what they've learned from the Ukraine-Russian war and all of that. And it sure seems to me that whether by accident or on purpose, the Ukraine-Russian war on the Ukraine front is really been used as a kind of a science experiment of where they were, like what you were just talking about with the trains, Tim, of they're using all of the failures on the part of Ukraine to better prepare themselves for what they see as coming, which is the same type of war on their homeland. So I think they're paying a lot of attention to what's going on in Ukraine. And if the thought occurred to me, I guess the reason why I'm saying this is thought occurred to me, you know, how many times in the past 2 or 3 months have we gone up and down of the war's coming to an end or the war's ramping back up? And even this week, you know, it appeared that the Trump administration was starting to support the Ukraine again, as far as this war not ending. And it just gave me pause and made me think, do they really want this to end? Because, man, they sure are getting a lot of firsthand real-world experience on modern warfare in ground battles. And, you know, these countries are taking away this intelligence and this information of what they're learning and better preparing their own troops. That may be kind of a weird way of looking at it, but when you stop and think about it, nothing can duplicate that, can it?
Well, I think it was almost like a training campus for war. I mean, it's you look at when you got Chinese coming in and getting trained and training with Ukrainians and Russians, you got cartel members that are going to learn to fly drones.
South Koreans,
you name it.
North Koreans, yeah.
We can sign up, 100,000 people or 10,000 people and send them over here for training. We're training in the battle of Ukraine and Russia. I mean, that's what it is. And they're taking that information back. It's like you can guarantee that these cartels and these South Koreans and North Koreans and whoever is involved in it that is taking, they're sending over their, a group of elite that are going over there and being trained, and then they're coming back and they're training more troops when they get back. It's like a ticking time bomb, I think.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, it is. And one of the things in one of the articles I was reading, they were talking about Ukrainian soldiers describing, a drone-infested corridor that usually was about 5 miles wide on either side of the front line as a kill zone because of remotely piloted UAVs, and they can't evacuate their wounded fast enough. And then, I don't know why, but for some reason that kind of clicked with me. Do you remember the drone activity? I think that was during the Biden administration here in the U.S. Remember all the drone spottings? I mean, we never had any confirmation of where they came from. They just suddenly weren't there anymore, but we had them flying around doing all kinds of strange, and they're gone now. I know that in the course of doing some looking at that, I just seen that just recently Danish military bases near Denmark, they've got a whole bunch of drones flying all over them, and they don't know where they're from or what they are, supposedly. So
I'll take it a little different way of, I personally believe, and this is Will's belief, that I think that the same people who run Hollywood are the same people who run wars. I think it's the same group of people as far as Esau Edom. And I think a lot of times it's almost like there's some sort of unwritten rule of God's universe that the enemy has to tell us what's coming. And in 1984, the movie Terminator came out. And if people who had seen that movie, if you remember at the beginning of the movie, there's this kind of battle scene, futuristic battle scene, where all of these hunter-killer drones are flying over, killing human beings. And that part of the movie took place in 2029, about 4 years from now. And that's when I read that, Tim, that's what I thought of, is we're not too far from that.
Yeah, it also adds a whole level of, what do you want to call it, terror or the unknown, as far as
absolutely.
Attack from above. You don't know whether that's, what their intent is, who they are, how do you fight back against certain things like that. I think there have been several movies where they've done that. It's just like run into those sort of things where, and we see, and like Jason was saying, all this drone training going on over there in Ukraine. And, they don't have any problem sacrificing their own people to meet their objectives. I mean, to them, that's just slaughter. But, they also don't mind if they don't have to, and if they can do it, what do you want to call it, remotely, why, and bring about, they feed off of fear, and they feed off of that power of those sort of things. So, this uncertainty, these sort of things, that's part of that spell casting. They cast fear into the groups of people, which is part of the reason our God says, fear not. It's don't beat them. So,
well, some good news from that region. I mean, if you believe the news, there's some reports out there that I guess the end of last month, in August, the Pentagon notified what they're calling the Baltic republics. These are countries that are on the border of Russia, Poland, and countries like that, and other NATO member countries, the United States government told them that they were no longer going to provide them weapons. That, this whole Ukraine-Russia war is bipolar in itself. It's up and down on who are we supporting and from day to day. But according to this, they gave official notice that they were no longer going to supply weapons or munitions. And one of the reasons cited, let me see if I can find it real fast. The reason why they said they were doing this was the United States plans on resupplying itself and building up its own weapons and arsenal and munitions to protect the homeland.
Interesting. That's good. I was worried we were going to give them another $6 billion worth of weapons there a week or so ago.
No, that's the Jews, Jason, not the Baltic nations.
There's so much doublespeak going on in this whole deal that it's just...
It's hard to keep track of who's giving who what.
Yeah,
we can sell something to Israel and it can end up in Ukraine, or we can sell something to some other country and it's like but the Pentagon wants them to stop, but are we going to stop supplying them with stuff? It's chaotic.
How about the Stinger missiles that were supposed to be in Ukraine that end up in Mexico?
Yes, exactly. I just watched the soundbite here a day or two ago, and it was Putin talking about destroying the Jewish hold over the United States, bringing down the one world government. And it occurs to me that, a lot of times this one world government or this, international control is, it depends on who you are and what you're talking about, your viewpoint. God has international control at all times. And do you want him? The alignment of these people with these, polar sites, they polarize the people that they come in contact with. It's really, it's confusing and mind-boggling sometimes, but basically you have to boil it down to who the main players are. You have God and you have Satan, and you have to kind of, organize which group is serving, which power point. And
well,
that can help.
Tim, I know who does the work of their father, the devil.
Yes. Yes.
So that's a pretty easy guess.
I'm all in favor of America taking care of America in these days.
Hey,
so,
great idea. I'll vote for you, Tim.
Well, and I see that Russia's helping train Chinese paratroopers now.
Isn't that something?
Noise on that. Yes. It's like, so we're talking about getting rid of Jewish control, but we're going to help the Chinese communists. And we all know communism is just another, face of Zionism. Those are they're one of the same outfits. So,
all roads lead back to Rome, don't they? It just seems it all goes back to the same place.
Yeah, that's not going to help with that. And that's why I brought the comment up about, we're going to get rid of this, but we're going to help these guys who actually pretty much espouse all the beliefs of the Zionists, and that's going to help out. So, it's really... depending on those in power, as far as physical realm goes, it's kind of like they sold out. They just don't understand. In one way or another, they're working for their father.
Well, and the phone number to call in is 970-224-4203. That's 970-224-4203. Had a couple of people trying to call in on wrong line, but that's the call-in number, 970-224-4203. Yeah, I saw that what you were just talking about with the Russians helping train Chinese paratroopers. And, boy, it's just, it's interesting. It's like you never know who's going to be helping who out or what they're going to be doing.
Feels like something that Earl Jones and Jack Moore would be sitting around talking about, huh?
I know.
Exactly.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Yep.
It's, well, and they're giving them, in the course of this training, quote unquote, you know, air quotes, they're giving them all kinds of equipment as well. So it's like you got the Ukrainian front on, and then you're training these guys and sending them equipment. And yeah, lots of questions there. For what? How come? And then we see there's a lot of, what do you want to call it, saber rattling going on, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go to the phone lines. Hello, caller.
Hey, Jason. I just calling in. You know, you're talking about those drones and stuff, and well, that movie, you know, the Terminator. I just got to call in about the drones. You know, all these shootings lately, like the one with Charlie Kirk and the ICE agents and stuff. They were off a rooftop, but we got a whole lot of people out there, or things, or whatever you want to call them, that have access to drones, so they could take someone out like Bobby Kennedy, or they could have taken out Charlie Kirk. I mean, we have to pray against stuff like that, because our government allows them to have those. You know, none of us are safe. And someone shoots at us with a drone, you wouldn't be able to tell if you're being shot at until you actually get hit. Then how do you return fire with something like that?
Good point.
Yes.
Very good point.
Good point, Warren.
Okay. God bless you.
God bless. Thanks for the call, Warren.
Warren brought up something I was going to talk about and on the Charlie Kirk deal, but I've been hearing all kinds of nonsense about that, and I started doing a lot of research on it this week, and Warren's right. I mean, there are drones now the size of aspirin tablets, and they're able to carry miniaturized payloads, explosive payloads. Have you guys heard or seen any of this stuff?
I've heard that. It sounds like it's out of like a science fiction movie or something in the, you know, yeah. Did you think of, you know, in the next, you know, 50 years down the road or something in the future? But no, I was looking at it and, you know, same thing. It's like, it's pretty crazy.
It is crazy.
Well, and then to add another level to that, if you mix AI in with that, why, you know, you don't have to necessarily have a person, quote unquote, in charge of those micro drones or something, you know. I mean, they can be AI control, and you just have a person in charge of the AI or in charge of that kind of stuff going on.
Or supposedly in charge of it.
Yeah, supposedly. That's what I say. We don't really. The face of war is changing, which is part of the reason I say, you know, we don't know what's a civil war here at home look like. You know, I mean, what is the odds are it's going to be something that we're not expecting. It's not going to be a textbook scenario. I mean, like, yeah, and I suppose some parts will, but there's other questions. And speaking about movies, Charlie Kirk, did you see that reference to Snake Eyes running around out there in 1998? That
crazy movie? Stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. The guy was, you know, shot in the neck. The name Tyler shows up in there. The date was September 10th. I mean, there's all kinds of...
The guy who was shot in the neck was named Charles Kirkland.
Yes. Yeah, thank you. And
in the movie, yeah.
Was that the
Snake Eyes movie with...
Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage, yep.
Yeah. Yeah. But it just passes a little bit strange. You know what I mean? it's... Definitely more than coincidental. I mean, at least my way of thinking, I look at that and go, yeah, that's not good. You know, just odds are.
I was going to just jump in real quick and just say that I heard earlier this week about the, you know, this possible drone assassination scenario situation where it was possible that Charlie Kirk was assassinated by a drone. And I tell you, it did sound a little far-fetched at first, but the more that I looked into it, the more that it just made me realize that this is possible. And I don't know. I mean, you know, there's so many different things that are there's so many things that they're putting out there. And one person that I talked to, and they sent me some little bit of information on it. They said that basically with the nation in an uproar over Charlie Kirk and his assassination, that AI had jumped on the bandwagon and just went crazy, and that they started creating all kinds of different scenarios and different situations, started putting it out on social media, just basically. So, I mean, and I think it was just distraction. So people don't know exactly what happened, or they're trying to cover up the truth more. Is what I do know is they're not telling us the truth. And it, you know, other than that, well, I mean, I've looked at so many different situations, but I got on this and was looking at these drones and looking at this different stuff, and I mean, I really believe that this stuff's real, and I believe that they have the capability of doing that. And you know, my two cents is I'm still looking at Israel over the assassination, because I think Netanyahu is just, I think that he's just trying to cover it up. That's my two cents worth, but I know what they're telling us isn't the truth. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, the accepted narrative is definitely BS. I mean, there's no two ways around. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but the rest of it's wrong. I mean, as far as the official explanation.
I think Netanyahu has now, it's either four or five times in an official stance, like recorded video messages, interviews, that sort of thing, gone out of his way to reassure everyone Israel had nothing to do with this. That seems like that's excessive to me, that you have to keep telling the entire world we have nothing to do with this. That's number one. Number two, I want to speak to those drones, because I really did spend a lot of time looking at this week, and this is going back to the late 90s as far as the miniaturized drone technology. And something I found out yesterday in some open source information is, go figure, Israel, in conjunction with DARPA here in the United States, the Defense Research Project, that makes a lot of weapons and new technology here in the United States. The drones that they have, y'all were talking about autonomous drones. The drones that, this isn't hypothetical, it's not theory, it's what they've developed. They actually have the ability now to use them as like a homing drone, so that if you have IP addresses and, you know, the smartphones that we carry, really any cell phone that works off of a SIM card has a unique digital signature that emits. You know, it's communicating with cell phone towers at all times. Well, the drones actually have the ability to hone in on that SIM card and basically return, or you can send it to wherever that phone is at. It's to me, that is that's something. I don't know what I mean. That's pretty impressive.
Well, and I think that the way that they use it is that battery is actually the explosive part of it too, and they can detonate the battery to basically self-destruct it, making it an explosive device. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's kind of what I'm, Jason.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, I mean, we saw that real world with the pagers and the cell phones,
right,
that Israel, you know, let the world see it. And it's the same thing with these little miniaturized drones.
Well, it's interesting because there's this huge and growing segment that some people may be unaware of, but you've got places like, I can't think of any names of them right now. I don't know. Hanaway, Apollo Shields one. They're doing counter drone systems for homeowners. I mean, some of them are. They're selling Sky. I think Sky something. Skyfend or Sky is an anti drone jammer. There's actually It always makes me, I don't know if laugh is the right word, but it just makes me shake my head when I look at the fact that, you know, there is nothing that you can develop that somebody else can't develop a counter against, and that you both make money. So somebody sells this, somebody sells that. But my question is who's making the money off of it? But it's a really big and upcoming market segment. Is this anti-drone, drone jamming, drone deterrent stuff. So I don't know. The question is, I don't know how effective it is, because if it was really effective, would the Ukraine issue be such a big deal on the kill zones and all that kind of stuff? But nevertheless, we're seeing kickback from, I guess you would call it, the private sector or the quasi-military sector on trying to, you know, control some of this or mitigate some of the drone incursion technology that's out there. So it's a very real situation. I mean, I know we've got guys out there selling shotgun rounds that have, what, cables and nets and different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's video of them shooting drones down and doing different things like that. So
I've looked at a lot of that stuff, and I tell you what, it's going to be, even if you buy that kind of stuff, it's going to be really hard to shoot a drone down. People have no idea how. I mean, most of the time, a drone, you can find somebody and you can be locked onto their location and track them without them ever even knowing you're there. That's where they're at. I've had a couple weeks ago, and I've got a very inexpensive drone, but it's an older drone, but it works, and I like it. It does what I need to. It's got a decent camera on it, but my son and another guy were out, and they were out shooting prairie dogs, and on a very large piece of property, hills, mountains, going around on four-wheelers, and they'd been gone for about 2.5 hours, and I tried calling them, and I figured I couldn't get them on the phone because of the either the terrain or because they had their earmuffs on and they were probably shooting. So I took the drone and I launched the drone, and they were about 1.5 miles away, and it took me a minute and 38 seconds to find them. And they had no idea I was there until I started coming down and lowering the drone right over their heads. and then finally it was funny because they were looking around, and then it's like, oh, okay, yep, all right, Dad's checking on us. And then I got a phone call. But it was, I mean, if I went to try to find them or something like that, I mean, I could have spent an hour. Had no idea where that they were, but getting that high above them and being able to locate them, I mean, they definitely have their advantage, and it's no doubt in my mind that there's a good reason why they're using their, you know, in a tactical aspect. But, I've talked to a lot of these people, and these people are, well, I'm getting these drone rounds, and I'm going to load them up in my shotgun. What's the effective range on a shotgun? I mean, being realistic, I
have 30 yards.
Yeah.
I mean, not far.
Let's say you're not going to hit a drone at 100 yards with a 12 gauge. I guarantee you that, no matter what, especially if you have cables and nets and stuff that weighs a lot. I mean, it's going to fall out of the sky like a lead balloon. That's just the way it is. I think that's my opinion. So
I was going to say, I have a tough time hitting doves at 20 yards with 7.5 shot. So I don't see us shooting down drones very easily.
Right.
Past 25 yards, yeah.
Well, and the other issue with that is you're probably not talking about a single unit either. You know, I mean,
right.
If they send six of them and you bring down one, well, you still got five to deal with. So, yeah. And I was thinking of Ephesians 2 the one day there, and I think it's 2-2, and says, you know, wherein in times past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience. And it kind of ties into this. I mean, that's where they're going with this, and they're trying to exercise this.
That's a good thought, Tim. That's a really good thought. I think that ties in on a lot of different aspects, too.
Yes, yeah. So we're seeing.
Agreed.
And nothing to be, again, fear not. You know, I mean, that's what God says to do. So if he can quiet storms, if he can do all these things, they operate at his whim. So my God's greater than your God. But, it's just what a deal out there when we look at some of this stuff. It's more for just be aware and heads up.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
Well, let's go back over to Gaza and Gaza City. Do you have something to say, Will?
Nope. Okay. Go ahead.
Things just keep going on and on and on over there. I mean, last week we were talking about 750,000 people, the houses destroyed, and this week I seen 550,000 civilians evacuated, headed south from Gaza City, as the IDF just continues to push deeper and deeper into Gaza. It just keeps going on and on and on. And it's like, I guess I really don't know. How many people, does anybody have any idea how many people are over there in Gaza City?
I don't know. Supposedly they have 550,000 people that have left or, you know, evacuated. So that's a couple, and I don't find any numbers on how many people have been killed, you know, but it's got to be. I was looking at photos of Gaza here just the other day. It looks worse than any pictures I ever seen at Dresden during World War II. It's like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I will tell you, I'm not sure, Jason, that we're ever gonna know how many have been killed or how many have been displaced or whatever, and quite frankly, the reason being is because the Jews are controlling all that information.
Right.
And, you know, they lie to us about the weather and baseball games. You know, certainly they're going to lie to the world about what's going on there in Gaza. So, I mean, that's I will tell you, I just pulled this up. As of this, once again, we were just sitting here talking about lies. And I'll be fair with everybody. I'm taking this off of Wikipedia. But according to Wikipedia, that in 2017, Gaza City had 590,000 people.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So,
wow. That's interesting.
It is interesting, right, Tim? Because, I mean, we're being told that 550,000 have moved, and gosh knows how many have been killed or whatever. To me, it's kind of like that 6 million Jew thing. In my opinion, there were never 6 million Jews in Germany in the first place. But I don't know if the numbers are going to mass out right, Jason. I don't know what to believe. I'm sitting here reading now, just going through some new statistics. At the beginning of 2025, there was an estimated 520,000 people in Gaza City. So sounds like 30,000 more than were actually there have left. I don't know how that works out.
Dang.
Yeah. And we know a lot of people have starved to death or died or, been killed. I know I was reading one article here on that stuff going over there about, you know, and they were talking, an IDF spokesperson, he was a brigadier general, his last name was Gaffrin. But in regards to, you know, they accuse everyone else of what they do. And one of the quotes was, Hamas has shown the world its true strategy to exploit its own people and prolong this war, end quote, said Defren. And it's like, really? I mean, I have no particular dog in a fight with the Palestinians at all, but it sounds to me more like that's what they're doing. And there was a quote in there, and I don't know whether this is a misquote or a mistranslation or what, but he was talking, he said, this quote, just see, pick up on this. Over the past week, Hamas had demonstrated his tactics by firing on a UN team using stolen United Nations vehicles to obstruct the building of a new road for aid deliveries and robbing four UNICEF trucks at gunpoint, depriving thousands of infants of baby formula. That's what he said. And, you know, I'm reading other places where that's what they're doing. So they're blowing up water supply depots, food depots. They're blocking civilians from reaching safe zones and everything else. So, you know, it's, what is it, the pot calling the kettle black, I guess. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on that's interesting.
Well, I mean, that's a typical tool of Satan, right? Like, he takes what's good and calls it bad and takes what's bad and calls it good, and they're serving their father, the devil. They're doing the exact same thing. They're blaming on other people and that sort of thing. And I don't know if you guys saw it or not, but Netanyahu yesterday, I think it was yesterday or day before yesterday, went to the United Nations and addressed the United Nations and told everyone they don't care. This war is going to continue. They're going to keep doing what they're doing in Gaza and Jordan and Syria and all this other stuff. Did you guys see everyone get up and leave?
A lot of them.
It was like a standing ovation without the applause. I mean, dozens and dozens of dignitaries from across the world, as he began to speak, just got up and walked out.
Hmm.
I thought that was great.
I did, too. Well, and he came out this last week and said that they're just going to continue to fight the Israel's enemies until they're gone. And then his quote was, many of those who wage war in Israel today will be gone tomorrow. And I think that just, you know, we've talked about it before. You know, they live by the sword, they're going to die by the sword.
That's right. That's right.
Interesting. I think that I was looking at that picture of him there, and it's holding up his hand, and I think you mentioned it too, Bill, but what's up with his hand? There's some damages on that picture, if you
remember. I don't know.
What was that?
Wound. I don't know.
My first thought was, is it a tattoo? I mean, I don't know what it is. I've never noticed that on Netanyahu before. It's almost looks like a powder burn or a burn mark. I mean, to me, I don't know. I don't know what the heck that is.
Well, and so, yeah, I don't know. You know, we've heard about the Black Eye Club. We've heard about a lot of different things mm-hmm. like that. So I don't know if there's some kind of a. My guess would be that there's some kind of a spiritual and significant meaning to that hand. I just, why else would he be? You know, if you had an injury like that and you're on national TV, those guys they put a lot of pride and a lot of effort into, you know, looking prim, proper, and well groomed, and you know, the clothing and everything else. Why would you stick your hand out there like that? So,
well, I'll go a little further, Tim, and that's his left hand. And so there's a whole science dealing with kinesiology and you know, that's how body language and that sort of thing. And generally, people that are giving a speech, if they're right-handed, they'll use their right hand to motion and make gestures and that sort of thing. And Benjamin Netanyahu is a right-handed guy. I know I looked that up because I didn't want to sound stupid trying to talk about this morning. And I think it's interesting that he's, you know, on purpose using his left hand. And that was captured. It just happened to be captured by a photographer, right? And that was kind of what my gut was telling me too, Tim, is I wonder what kind of, you know, Luciferian Kabbalism, you know, that, you know, we don't know about that's going on there, you know, and it means something to somebody. And that was where my gut took me to almost immediately.
Yeah, with that thumb and that eye, if you look at that photo, and it was a, you know, if you look at that thumb and that eye, there's a particular framing of, it's some kind of spell casting, I'm sure. I mean, there's something there, and I don't know what it is, but, you know, maybe somebody else does. But there's a lot of that goes on with their handlers. And I think Pastor did a sermon years ago about spellcasting techniques of the enemy. And I remember, you know, there's that stuff go. That stuff is real, and it goes on. And that's probably what we're looking at right there.
I knew some Turkish guys one time that told me that they were telling me all about the bunyak, and that's the evil eye, right? And they told me you could always tell that someone was putting the evil eye on you because it was like sighting up the right the sights of a rifle. That they would kind of do exactly what Netanyahu's doing in this photograph, and they would sight you up, you know, with their hand like a rifle. And that's interesting that you said that, Tim, because I hadn't even thought about that. But when you look at that, that certainly seems like what's happening.
Yes, yes. So I mean I didn't spend any time. I'm sure a guy could spend some time and probably come up with what's going on there. But you know, there's something like that. There's no, they don't mess around with that. It's just like the movie things we've talked about, a lot of that other stuff. They place great emphasis on those sorts of things way more than we do. Actually, that's one of those. I think that goes back to that fear not thing. It's like, yeah, whatever. My God's better, bigger, and stronger than your God, but that doesn't mean that they're not doing so.
I think it goes back to the warning of being, you know, being aware of the Jews and their myths and their fables of, you know, of that's kind of what I think about when I think about that stuff, is the sorcery and the witchcraft. And, you know, we were told to be aware of that stuff and to steer clear of it. And who knows, right? It's all speculation. It makes for good Saturday morning conversation of what Netanyahu was doing. But I'll tell you this. This is the one thing I can declare, and I'll put my foot down and spit in the ground and say I'm right on this. I don't know what he was doing, but I guarantee it was evil, because it's Benjamin Netanyahu.
Yeah. Well, and talking about these guys, a little bit of a shift in focus, but still, nevertheless, I see Tucker Carlson's being accused by several different Jewish groups and media outlets of promoting anti-Semitic conspiracy theories about the about Charlie Kirk's assassination. You know, and Tucker's,
well done, Tucker.
That's amazing. Yeah, yeah. That's a bad way to ask some questions and think, buddy. So. It's interesting to me that if you even bring anything out like that, which we have done too, but, you know, as far as questioning it, why immediately that's anti-Semitic, you know, that's horrific. I mean, how could you do that? And it's like, well, past performance guarantees future damages, you know, and it's kind of like, you guys have a certified track record that we can look back on. So,
I'd like to take a minute, Jason, and talk about what Tucker said.
Absolutely.
If that's okay.
I think this
is one of the greatest things that's getting underreported. I mean, I really do. I don't want to be a Tucker fanboy, and I mean, there's plenty of things that I'm sure I'd get along with Tucker, and plenty of things that I wouldn't get along with Tucker, but I'm going to tell you something. In my opinion, Tucker has balls of steel to get up and say what he said. And in front of gosh knows how many people were there at that State Farm Stadium, and the world was watching. I've heard all kinds of numbers, 150 million people watching across the world or something like that. So at the memorial service for Charlie Kirk, Tucker Carlson takes the stage, and he's talking about his friend Charlie Kirk, and then he starts talking about this, and he says, I guess it's okay. I'm just going to read what Tucker Carlson said. He said, so it's about 2000 years ago in Jerusalem, and Jesus shows up and he starts talking about the people in power, and he starts doing the worst thing that you can do, which is telling the truth about the people, and they hate it and they just go bonkers. They hate it and they become obsessed with making him stop. This guy, he's got to stop talking. and they say, we've got to shut this guy up. And I can just sort of picture, this is Tucker talking, I can just sort of picture the scene in a lamp-lit room with a bunch of guys sitting around eating hummus and thinking, what do we do about this guy that's telling the truth about us? We must make him stop talk. And there's always one guy with a bright idea, and I can just hear him saying, I've got an idea. Why don't we just kill him? That'll shut him up, and that'll fix the problem. And then he said, but it doesn't work that way, and it didn't work that way. And the reason I said this guy's got balls of steel is Tucker Carlson said in front of the world, the Jews killed Jesus Christ. And those were the people that were in power. Those were the people who conspired to kill our Savior. And Tucker told a tremendous amount of truth in that little bit of a quote that Jesus did call out those people in power. We know the stories. We don't need to say them again. But what Tucker Carlson did without saying the word Jew was he told the story of a conspiracy to assassinate Jesus Christ. And I guarantee you that the algorithms changed on Google and DuckDuckGo and that sort of thing, because I'm sure all across this country, people were search engineing who killed Jesus, who were the people in power. And I just think it was fantastic. I think that's one of the best things that has happened probably for our people, is for a guy like Tucker Carlson to take an international stage and call the Jews out for being the assassins of Jesus Christ. What do y'all think?
Well, I think it was fantastic. And I think that was I think that was the best part of, I didn't watch the whole thing. I'll admit that. But I did go back and watch a bunch of highlights, and that one by far was, I think, the best thing that was said at that memorial. Also, I just want to say that he's been doing this for a while, and that's one of the reasons I've liked Tucker Carlson a lot more for what he's done recently. And I'll tell you what, his a couple of the ones that he had when he was up there talking with Ted Cruz was just profound and eye-opening. And it's like, I mean, he basically, Ted Cruz was talking about, hey, we need to bless Israel. We need to bless the Jews. And Tucker's like, okay, why do we need to do that? And he's like, well, because it's in the Bible. And okay, well, let's show me. And he's like, you don't know about this? You haven't been told this? And Ted Cruz got really PO'd a couple times, and he was mad at Tucker for bringing this thing up. And you know, Tucker he hasn't stopped. That's what I really appreciate about the guy, is he's continued to go on and expose. I really think that he's doing it in a very tactical
yes
sort of way, and I think he's doing a good job, and I think he knows a lot more than he's letting out. Also, that's just my two cents worth, but I can tell when go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I'll kind of go back to Pastor Pete talking about truth junkies, and I can't prove this. I mean, I don't know it, but in my mind, I think Tucker Carlson learned the truth. He learned the truth about the state of Israel and the Jews, and like a lot of us, and I'm speaking for myself, once you learn that and you start putting the pieces together and connecting the dots, and you realize, holy crap, I am learning the truth about one of the greatest mysteries in the world, and it's right in front of my face. You can't help but talk about it. You can't help but tell others about it, because it's the truth, and you want the truth out there. I mean, it burns inside you, and you got to get it out, right? And the only difference is Tucker Carlson has a huge platform. And in my opinion, when Tucker got fired by Fox, that was about the time that Tucker started talking about the Jews. and being critical of the state of Israel. And, you know, he didn't stop. He didn't cry in his beer and say, woe is me. He has created his own platform, and he's doing fantastic, and he hasn't stopped, right? The truth is still inside him. He has seen it, and once you see it, you can't unsee it. And he's pretty dedicated to getting it out there as this, you know, what we're talking about at the Charlie Kirk Memorial. I don't see it as inappropriate. I don't there was twofold there, and I guess I should have made this point. Not only did Tucker call out the people who murdered Jesus Christ, but he did it in such a way that he was comparing it to what happened with Charlie Kirk, that Charlie Kirk was assassinated for telling the truth. And I don't think it was an accident that Tucker was talking about the Jews, because I think Tucker probably thinks Israel is the one that killed his friend Charlie Kirk.
Yeah. Well, and there, you know, going back to that interview with Ted Cruz, I mean, I like the way Ted said, well, you don't have a dog fight. You're not a politician. And he goes, wait a minute. I do have a dog in the fight. I'm a Christian. It goes deeper than politics, you know. And, you know, there's so much of that. And, of course, during the course of this whole deal with Charlie Kirk, one of these groups are accusing us or accusing people of a medieval blood libel. And it's,
I'll try to get some of those videos posted up on the Newswire, too. So if either one of you guys or if anybody out there, if anybody runs across them, go ahead and just send them to me. Place where I can get them, and I'll get them ripped off and put them on there. I think that they're definitely worth watching. But we got to take a break. We're going to be right back after this song. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be back for the second hour coming up.
Now, have you seen them flying saucers, or some of them black helicopters flying down low and over my backyard recently? Seen them foreign troops in ninja suits leaving imprints of their combat boots in the meadow down near the neighbor next to me? Heard they're building concentration camps from the rate hike off our postage stamps to protect and defend their great democracy. Though my vote in the last election didn't quite match the same projection made by those beautiful talking heads on my TV. And when I called them to complain and I asked them to explain, they just said that it proves that you're not in the groove of the new majority. Yeah, sure. Well, just between you and me, can't you feel the conspiracy? Can't you sense a hypocrisy, as they call it, democracy? Well, it's a threat to your sanity, and not to mention your liberty. And it's all an evil, filthy, rotten conspiracy. Now they've got microwaves and laser beams and rays to look inside your dreams and satellites that can see your DVDs. They got chips that fit inside your head that'll make you think their thoughts instead, and drugs that'll make you do just as they please. And to make things even more serious, they got strains of new bacteria that are surely to cause some unknown new disease. And that's why we got fear and high anxiety and paranoid perplexity and the gradual loss of all our liberties. And as they try to bring us all down, they might leave us with a frown. They might even be the source of all the rumors in this town. Well, just between you and me, can't you feel the conspiracy? Can't you sense a hypocrisy, as they call it, democracy? Well, it's a threat to your sanity, and not to mention your liberty. And it's all an evil, filthy, rotten conspiracy. We'll be right back. and phone calls to the Central Intelligence Agency. We'll just hope and pray someday they'll see that you and me are not the enemy, nor do we believe in cult theology. And as their police try to bust us, we'll keep trying to find some justice, though it's hidden behind a wall of masonry. We'll keep working out our salvation with the feeling of fear and trembling, hoping and praying someday the truth might set us all free. Just cause the media won't respond don't mean there's nothing going on. And brother, what'll you do if there's something to all the words inside this song? Well, you can say that I'm wild-eyed, that all my fears are unjustified, or that I'm totally mystified by a man who's crucified. But just between you and me, what hung him up on that tree? It was all an evil, filthy, rotten conspiracy. Yeah, it's all an evil, filthy, rotten conspiracy. Believe me.
And we're back. Man, are you there?
Yes, sir.
I pushed the right button then.
Yeah,
oh, that's good.
I pushed the right one.
You know, I'm going to jump right back into it, Jason. As we were going back, or going to break, Tim was talking about that Ted Cruz and Tucker Carlson interview, which was just entertaining. I mean, it really was to watch. I love to watch politicians squirm in general, and there's not much more of a squirmy guy than Ted Cruz. But, you know, Tim talked about the quote of when Ted Cruz in some righteous indignation told Tucker, you know, he doesn't have a dog in the fight. He's not a politician. And my thought on that was, it was that Ted Cruz admitting to the world that politicians are owned by the Jews? Because that's their dog in the fight. You know, what would it matter? You know, they shouldn't have a dog in the fight either, right?
No.
But I don't know. Just a thought. And I mean, and we do know, it's not just a thought. We know the fact about AIPAC, right? And Marjorie Taylor Greene, you know, that little spitfire out of Georgia, she's her and what's the fellow from Kentucky? Thomas Massey. You know, those two representatives have made it a point to come out and point fingers at, you know, all of their peers there. That to my knowledge, Thomas Massey and Marjorie Taylor Greene are the only two elected officials in the House of Representatives that haven't taken Jewish money. So that gives you an idea of the other 500 and some odd supposed representatives of the American people that are owned by AIPAC.
Well, yeah. I think the other thing is I couldn't help but feel when I watched that interview, and it was a significant, I felt like that was maybe even like Jason said, he may have known more than he even talks about for a long time, but I felt like that was kind of a turning point interview with Ted Cruz for him there. Like he suddenly had become awakened to the fact that, wait a minute, it goes deeper than, I'm a Christian, I want to understand this, you know, I mean, why, you know, so, when you see those things, I mean, that's the way I felt about it when I seen it, maybe it was theatrics, I don't know, maybe he was already more aware of that, but that was just that moment of fusion, you know, or that moment of gelling of those thoughts, you know, sometimes we have our thought processes aren't always hard and direct. Sometimes you're playing around with ideas like, well, you know, it could be. And then there's that catalyst that suddenly causes it to harden and to gel, you know, like, oh, I see. That's the way it is. Yeah, that's right. You know, so you get that witness, that witness with your spirit. Just, you know, I got it. Yeah, it's like, okay, Lord. So,
well, we got a caller on the line that we're going to go to. But before that, I just wanted to read a scripture. I was trying to find it, and I don't know. It just it was the one that I was thinking of when he was talking about not having a dog in the fight or not being one of the dogs. But it's Psalms 22:16, and it says, "For dogs have surrounded me and deliver my soul from the sword, my only life from the power of the dog." And I don't know, just wow. Interesting. But with that said, we're going to go to the phone lines. Hello, caller.
Hey, just to connect a few dots with Tucker Carlson and what he knows. I know, I think he's in pretty tight with the Duck Dynasty boys. And didn't you catch Bill Robertson on camera once with some of our literature in his hand?
Yep, at one point, yep, that's what happened.
Yeah, I thought so. But that's all, just another point.
Good point. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Good point.
Where are you calling from?
Oh, this is Tim, just north of the other Tim.
Okay. All right. Other Tim from Nebraska. Well, thanks for calling, Tim. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Yep. Bye.
Hey, Jason, before we move too further on, far along, can I talk about Ted Cruz for a second?
Absolutely.
All right. So I live in the great state of Texas, and a lot of us still consider this to be the Republic of Texas, but I don't think it's possible for a state as great as of Texas to have failed so miserably in the election of U.S. senators, because we have maybe the two biggest rhino neoconservative senators in Washington, D.C., and that's John Cornyn and Ted Cruz. These guys are just, they're terrible when it comes to human beings and representing the people of the state of Texas. But Ted Cruz, you know, he ran for president very unsuccessfully. And when he was running for president, I started learning a lot about this guy because he was running against Obama back then, or running for the primary for the chance to run against Obama. And so here is Ted Cruz in a nutshell. First off, he is not a natural born citizen. He was born in Canada, I believe in Alberta. And he was born not to American parents. His mother was an American citizen, is an American citizen, but his father is a Cuban. And a lot has been made about his father being this evangelical Christian. I think his dad is dead now. Rafael Cruz was his name, I believe. And something that is important to notate here is, you know, if you remember back during the Obama regime, that we were all convinced, and I still am, that Obama wasn't a natural-born citizen of the United States. He was probably born in a foreign country. Certainly his father was a foreign national, maybe, unless his father was the communist Frank Marshall, I think was the guy's name. But regardless, what I can tell you about Ted Cruz is he is not a natural-born U.S. citizen. He was born in Canada. The Canadian government, during his time running for president, the Canadian government actually released an official statement saying, as far as Canada is concerned, Ted Cruz is a Canadian citizen. And if he was in a foreign country, he would be afforded the protection of the Canadian laws and government like any other Canadian citizen. So he was a Canadian citizen. But let me tell you about his dad. His dad, there was this myth that his dad had, fled out of Cuba and got to Florida like a lot of Cubans did. Well, that's not true. His dad was a communist rebel that fought with Castro to overthrow Batista. His dad was a communist. His dad took part in the communist revolution in Cuba and overthrew Batista, who was an ally to the United States. So when you really look at Ted Cruz from the very beginning, and we think about he's this firebrand senator or whatever, what he is the son of a communist revolutionary who was born in a foreign country to a mixed race couple who did not come to the United States until he was, I think, 12 years old. And that is Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is very, very... He resembles Barack Obama as far as his upbringing and heritage and that sort of thing a great deal. And I said back then, you know, going back, I don't know, 16, 17 years ago, this is just the Republican Barack Obama. That's all Ted Cruz is. He's Barack Obama with lighter skin and an R next to his name. It's the same type of parentage and the same type of history. So I just wanted to put that out for everybody to listen to. Ted Cruz is not a good dude.
Well, and I remember when he was running for presidency, I was, my first thought was, we got somebody from Texas. We got a Republican. He's a Christian.
Yep.
I'm like, you know, this is our guy, right? And that's what I originally thought. Then there was some stuff that he said, and I did the same thing. I started digging into him, and it was like, man. At first I'm like, this can't be true. This can't be true. And I kept digging into it and digging into it and digging into it. And then, you know, I had some other people that are, they said the same thing. It's like, oh man, this guy, you know, this guy from Texas, he's great. This is our guy. This is, you know. We got to back this guy. And I'm like, let's do some research into it. And we all came up with the same thing. And it was like, whoa. And that's what I thought. It was like the Republicans' version of Obama. I mean, it sounded like, I mean,
yep.
And it's like they had their narrative. It's like no matter who got in, they were going to start the same arguments, and they could have went both directions. It was just...
Yep.
Just strange.
Yeah, different wrappers, same candy bar inside. Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly it. Coming from the same manufacturer is the key. It's coming out of the same Zionist Jewish-controlled factory is what it is. And if you really dig into Ted Cruz, you know, the guy went to Princeton and you know, went to Harvard Law School and all of this. And if you look at his parents, it's like, how in the world did this guy get sucked into these Ivy League schools? And it's the same thing with Obama. Like, you know, that shouldn't have happened, but it sure as heck did. And, so it's just, he is not what he appears to be. That's all I wanted to get out there.
Yep, good point.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very, very good point. Well, let's stick with what's going on in Texas. Will, what can you tell us about this ICE shooting down there?
Yeah, this is interesting. You know, it's funny to me that as quick as this went into the news cycle, it seems like it got flushed right out. But 2 weeks to the day after the Charlie Kirk assassination, so it was an ICE field office up in Dallas, and the nearest I can figure out what happened is, it wasn't a detention facility like a jail, but they did have holding areas where they were bringing, illegal aliens from the detention facility to this facility for things, for administrative purposes, so that they could go before an immigration judge and that sort of thing. So a van pulls into what is called a Sallyport area. It's just kind of a controlled area where they can offload the prisoners. And some shots rang out just indiscriminately into the van. They hadn't got the illegal aliens out of the van yet. So someone started shooting into the van, and I really don't have the final death total, but I think a couple of illegal aliens got killed, one injured, no ICE agents injured. The shots came from across Stedman Avenue from an office building, three-story office building, which strangely enough housed a group of immigration attorneys. I guess the Dallas cops were there pretty doggone quick. And as they were making their way to the roof, another shot rang out. and the shooter killed himself. Interestingly enough, I'll throw this out there just for some points of conversation. The weapon that was used by the sniper was a Springfield 1903 bolt action 30-06. Kind of a copycat or whatever you want to call it. This is the third instance that I know of this, of someone getting assassinated with inscriptions being scratched onto the brass casing of the round of ammo. In this instance, it had anti-ice written on it. That was the phrase that was written on it. And this guy, who was the shooter, I guess he left some notes talking about this. Hopefully this will give ICE agents some real terror to think about, that there's a sniper with armor-piercing rounds on the roof. There's all kinds of links going back where this is going to be another guy that was into the trannies and the transgender stuff. It's another example of whether it happened the way that we're being, and I personally believe on this one, it happened exactly the way we're being told it happened. I don't see any indication otherwise on this one. But the real key is the narrative is continuing to be pushed that there's going to be violence against the ICE activities of rounding up these illegals. And it's coming from a very delusional segment of our population that has been held up by the world as righteous and to be protected. And that's these queers and the fags and the trannies. But they're the ones who are the fingers are starting to point at as far as the violence against against the activities of ICE.
Interesting.
I did notice just from a technical aspect of it, and I never seen a picture of the rifle. I can't find the photo I had in mind at the moment, but so I don't know whether it's a stock photo or an actual photo. But as far as the engraved ammunition went, which is an interesting tie-in to Charlie Kirk's shooting. But several rounds of that ammunition were on stripper clips. If he was using a scope Springfield, stripper clips are useless to load that rifle. So, you know, the question then becomes, what was the point of having stripper clipped ammo there with five rounds in the stripper clips with it engraved? I mean, they have to be individually loaded into the rifle. So that's just the technical notation on some of the things that went on there. So I didn't see the rifle, so I don't know whether it was scoped. I don't know whether it was open sight rifle or what, but it just seems a little odd to me. I mean, it looked like older military ball ammo in a five-round stripper clip with engraving on it. So I was like, that doesn't quite. And I realized we are dealing with evidently non-expert, people who handle that. So after all, he did shoot the people he was purporting to support. So there's several things there that are strange.
I might be able to understand it's not to be argumentative, Tim, but my understanding just from local information I got, it was not a scoped rifle. He was using iron sights. Yeah, and they've already tracked back where he got. Yeah, where he got the rifle, and the particular dealer, I guess, sold the rifle and some ammunition on stripper clips to the guy in a bandolier. And I think that's why he indiscriminately fired into the van itself. There wasn't an actual human being targeted. He just fired rounds into the van. And that's, I think that's why it didn't make any rhyme or reason of why he was, like you said, shooting, killing the people that he supposedly, was supporting. So that's my understanding on all that. That's what makes me think.
Yeah.
Yeah. this yeah. makes sense. Yeah, this makes yeah, it's that, just a crazy that's right. guy. That's, yeah. You know, I don't know if this guy was queer or just supported the queers or whatever, but kind of the whole thought of like what you were talking about, the double mindedness, Tim, of so you're killing these wetbacks that you are, you know, you're against ICE, but you're killing the guys that ICE is supposedly oppressing. And I just thought about, you know, being given over to a reprobate mind, right? You know, of just yeah. you at some point, just your thoughts are evil all the time, right? And you just you're given over to your own reprobate mind. And at this time, you know, I guess this guy felt like this made sense. I don't know.
Don't help us so much. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, unfortunate, but I hate to say this because I know it's going to come off wrong, but if somebody was going to die, I'm thankful it was not an ICE agent out there doing their job.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We got a caller on the line. Let's go to the phone lines. Hello, caller.
Good morning, Tim, Will, and Jason.
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
Good morning, Kevin.
Hey, I'd like to comment on a few things you're talking about. This thing about Glenn Cruz. Back when he ran for president, that Glenn Beck was just kissing his rear end all the time. And Glenn Beck is, he's an enemy to me. You know, everything's Jew. Everything.
Me too, Kevin.
Yeah, absolutely. And all the talk show hosts, there are Hannity and all of them. And I heard this week something about October 5th. There's supposed to be a Jewish recognition day about putting out flags, Israeli flags and things. Have you heard anything about that?
I have not. Have you?
I haven't. I heard something about it. And you're talking about the German military?
Yes.
And all the military forces. I've been trying to look up numbers on their total forces. Germany has about 180,000 right now. The UK couldn't fill Wimbledon Stadium with all their military. France is less than that. And then all the others. All of Europe doesn't total anything military strength. And they're sucking us right into this thing with Ukraine, continuing all the time. And the thing about Gaza, it's not a war. Gaza doesn't have an army. They keep calling it a war. Don't you have to have an army?
You would think so.
I would think so.
Good point.
Yeah. And then here at home, I think the big fight's really starting when they indicted Comey, and there's all kinds of things. They're charging him with perjury, but then obstruction of justice, and that really just opened up a big spider web of the charges. There's just a big list of federal charges that can be developed out of this, and there's a notice about a whole bunch of people quitting Department of Justice as soon as this indictment came in.
Right.
And they know what's going on. They knew what happened. And I think it's going to really grow. I want Brennan and Clapper and all his cronies to start feeling the heat. And some of those charges, this obstruction of justice, obstruction of congressional hearings can bring some serious time, from 1 year, 5 years, fines, and I could see it get extended out. They always do things like that. But it sure be satisfying to see somebody go to jail. That's what I have to say. I really anticipating it, really hoping for it. Do you have any comments,
Kevin,
on that?
Don't you think if we start indicting everyone that has committed perjury or obstruction to the Senate or the Congress, I'm not sure we have enough jail beds to put them all in jail.
Good point.
I just can't really, I guess really, in reality, I can't see it happening because how many of them are guilty, you know, so.
Sure.
I think that's one of the things, only God's going to know that.
Yeah.
Well, it's just a hop and a skip and a jump from there to the word treason, you know, because basically, you know, if you start delving into it, it's not very long, and it's like, well, you're trying to cut the underpinnings of our country out under us. So, yeah, that's kind of the definition of treason, right? So,
That really leads to conspiracy. It is a conspiracy because they stole our president away from us. They attacked him. They sued him. They arrested him. They did everything to Trump, and that is a conspiracy. You know, all these intelligence agencies are having all this stuff going on, and then we got to arresting him, things like that. Those are conspiracies, and those are treason to me.
Kevin, we throw conspiracy around a lot, and it's been so demonized with people getting accused of being conspiracy theorists and all of that sort of stuff. And that's just the tool of the enemy, right? To try to demean those people that are trying to make sense. But you know, the criminal definition of a conspiracy is just two or more people that are joined together to commit an unlawful act. And I mean, that's all that conspiracy is. And so exactly what you're describing, if it's to steal an election or steal a car, if two or more people get together and talk about it and then they do it, that's a conspiracy.
Yeah, it certainly is, isn't it?
So, yeah. So, I mean, what you're saying is it's not crazy. I think it's spot on.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll see about tomorrow. And this thing about them pushing the Russians, they're pushing too far. They're way too far.
I agree.
That war you're talking about, it's mind-boggling to me because really Russians are so top-notch at it. They're not even jeopardizing the lives of their troops on the front lines. And it's just amazing. I fought in Vietnam. Man, I'd like to have a drone there, buddy, out in the jungle and stuff. I'll tell you. Oh, shit.
What years were you in Vietnam, Kevin?
Well, I joined the Army at 17 in 69. I got trained as a medic. They sent me to Fort Hood. And when I turned 18, I requested to go to Nam. So me and a pal, they called it 1049, and I was sent to I Corps, the AmeriCal Division. We worked a place called the Ashaw Valley, and it wasn't a good place, man. I mean, we had mountains, lowlands, and the lowlands was part of our AO was My Lai. That My Lai massacre just happened. And I ended up, I got hit. I got shipped back to San Francisco because my mom lived up by Lake Tahoe.
Okay.
And so they assigned me. I said, can I get a job here when I recover? They said, yeah. They gave me a job working at the Presidio at the end of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and then I got shipped over to Oakland Army Base where I gave help to doctors. We gave shots. I ran an immunization department. People going to Southeast Asia and people coming back were giving physicals to ETS out of the military. And later I joined the reserve for about 5 years. I joined the Special Forces Unit, 11th Special Forces, and was a medic. I wasn't totally Special Forces trained, but they needed medics so bad.
Right.
I came out of the Army active as a E5. They made me an E6. And before I left, I was an E7, Sergeant First Class. So my point going back in the reserve was to go to jump school. So I got to go to jump school at age 26.
Good for you. Did you stick with it?
I always stay with them about 5 years because I got tired of the weekend warrior type thing. After Vietnam, the military just emptied out and they needed people. And I stuck with it so long until we had a jump one time and I didn't show up for that month's drill and up to Ravenna Arsenal in Northeast Ohio. They dropped two guys on high power wire, and one of them, his arm got blown off. Yeah, I told my wife and kids, I ain't going back there. And I just quit. I didn't want to get killed.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. Well, thanks for letting me share that.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you sharing it with us.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You have a good day, Kevin. And
you too. God bless you all.
God bless. Bye.
Well, and And to go back to the conspiracy issue, I mean, the Bible talks about a lot of conspiracies, you know, I mean, given that fact, you know. So we have Acts 23, 40 people conspired to kill Paul, said they placed themselves under a curse and agreed to, that they wanted Paul dead, you know. So,
well, we have, going back to what Tucker was saying, the whole the accusation and arrest and murder of Jesus was a conspiracy, wasn't it, Tim?
Yeah. There's the, you know, I always think it's you're in a good crowd when they call you a conspiracy theorist.
There you go. You know,
it's like there have been a lot of the original "let's prove this wasn't a conspiracy" thing, or that it was a conspiracy from the enemy. That you know, conspiracies of the dog, conspiracies of the Jews as far as Christ's death and as far as his rising out of the grave and everything else. I mean, the list is long, and sometimes they don't use that word, but it's like you said, if you apply the definition of it, where more than a couple of them have agreed to basically create a false narrative or do something, well, that's conspiring. That's a you know, so I mean, there can be good conspiracies too. You can conspire to tell people the truth. You know, you can. It's just one of those things. So,
Jason, I know we're getting short on time, but one that I'd like to hit. Did you guys get a chance to look into what the? I guess I have to say this right now. The Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, what he has done with these, all of these commanding generals and admirals, of calling them in to the Pentagon?
No, I heard briefly about it, but I don't know exactly what it was about at all.
Nobody does. I don't think there's any information.
Okay.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, so there is zero information of why this is happening. And Tim, maybe just correct me if I'm wrong, if I get something wrong here, but so pretty much all of, for the lack of a better term, the command staff of all generals that are in command billets, so like one-star generals, four-star generals, and admirals across the United States Marine Corps, the Navy, Air Force, Army, they're being called in to Virginia. And the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, is going to have some kind of sit-down, face-to-face meetings with all of these men. And from what I've read,
all of their advisors as well, from what I understand.
And all of their advisors. Yep. And from what I've read and from what I understand, this hadn't been done before. I don't know. All of the talk of conspiracy, Tim, made me think of this. Good gracious. I mean, what I could sit here for hours and think about what they're going to talk about. I mean, I didn't know if you guys had any opinion on that. With everything going on in the world, what in the world do you think they're talking about?
Well, I had a couple thoughts on that. And basically, it was I mean, that's what I kept looking for. I kept thinking, okay, I'm going to find out something that they're, what are they talking about? What are they doing? And it was because it was over 800 generals plus their staff and advisors. So, I mean, you're talking thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And my next thought was, man, it's like all these guys in one spot. I don't think that's a really good idea either. But I mean, that's just, you know, putting my tinfoil hat on. But I don't know. It's just, I mean, I don't think it's ever been done before. And
not according to what I'm. Yeah.
Anyway, interesting. Tim, what's your thoughts?
When you look at the about all you're left with is rumors, you know. I mean, as far as you can kind of go back to, okay, what else? And you know, there's a rumor out there floating around that says Trump has suspended all communication with Netanyahu. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. I mean, but several other things, and supposedly Secretary of Defense was back-channeling through there, so maybe they're getting a call in to, you know, maybe there's some changes in protocol there. Maybe there's some changes in, I don't really know, but it's huge. But it also, I'm like you. First off, let's put all of our command structure in one place. That's never a good idea for continuation of command. Second off, you've now weakened this, you know, we're scattered all over the world right now, militarily speaking. I mean, we're talking about, they're bringing guys in from all over the world. I mean, we talk about Gaza, but there's a whole bunch of other countries that we're involved in or have presence in. So that weakens the command structure in those areas for enlisted troops and for that kind of stuff. In the event of something big happen, you know what I mean? So because basically you just took all of the superstructure, or the command structure out of play. There's a whole bunch of things. There's a reason that it's never been done in the history of our country before. You know, I mean,
yeah,
right. So, those are kind of my thoughts on it. I mean, no, we have some different ideas like that.
But the last time that I could find an example of anything like this happening is a Lincoln calling in essentially the War Department during the American Civil War. But the thing to keep in perspective there is you're talking about a tenth or less the size of what we're talking about gathering in now. You know, you had dozens of people going to D.C. to meet with Lincoln, not hundreds, if not, you know, more than 1,000. Wow. That's interesting that that's the last example I could find of anything close to this happening. I'm going to switch gears. I know we're running out of time, but a thought came to my mind, and I just want to throw this out at you guys. You were, you know, talking about cutting off all ties with Netanyahu and the state of Israel, Tim. And everybody, I think, I don't think anyone would disagree that the whole illegal immigration deal has been the number one priority of the Trump administration this go around. The effects are real. We're seeing it in the streets. It's a real thing. It's happening. And this, more than once, we've heard Trump himself and others in his administration talk about invaders and occupiers and, you know, our resources that these illegals are using or whatever. You think there's a chance at some point that in this administration, do you think there's a chance that the truth, what am I trying to say here? It's not just human beings that can invade and occupy. Foreign governments can do the same thing. And like what we were talking about with the Ted Cruz deal and all of these politicians being paid off and puppets of the state of Israel, do you think there's a chance that that is known to this administration and that's the next shoe to drop, or that may be a shoe to drop, that they're going to purge that influence in this country?
Well, I've heard some chatter about that too, I guess. I mean, seems like a big bite at this time, but it's, yeah, very possible. I mean, maybe a bunch of those guys are going to get walking papers out of the deal. I mean,
that's my thought, Tim, is this a loyalty oath moment of you're going to get all of these folks in? You got to remember, you know, officers, there's an allegiance to the commander in chief there, right? And I'm just wondering if that's what this is going to be, is, you know, there's a document that's drawn up or whatever, and they're going to be told, you sign this or you're out. And I don't know what that means. I don't know what's in that document or anything like that. I just, why would you, why now, right? Why now? And that's my thought, is this is going to be some kind of loyalty moment of if you're not willing to play ball, you got to leave the playground. And I don't know. We'll see.
Well, there's a lot of DEI and a lot of other chaff going on still and yet inside our military organizations that are leading to, what do you want to call it, schisms. I mean, that are going on. So it may be, this may be a let's all get on one page moment or get out. You know, I mean, that's how it is. I mean, we've got supposedly Trump said there will be no annexation of Gaza for Israel. We've got and those commanders have tremendous amounts of latitude in how they are able to bring about their orders. You know what I mean? So and it's not, we tend to be straight line thinkers, and sometimes that's not the way that works. I mean, in the reality of military stuff.
Yeah. Well, in addition to the DEI and all of that stuff, Tim, I think it's safe to bet that there are a lot of high-level military commanders that are in league with the state of Israel as well.
Yes, yes. Well, it's kind of been proven time after time, either voluntarily or involuntarily, you know.
Yes.
So, so there's that for sure.
You know, the program is now defunct, but it's going back post 9/11, all the way up into the teens, probably. It probably stopped in 2017, 2018, but quarterly, all across the United States, it was kind of an exchange. It was a one-way exchange program. It wasn't a two-way exchange program, but quarterly, all across the United States, law enforcement agencies, you could apply if you were in law enforcement management, commando level or whatever. You could apply for scholarships to go to Tel Aviv, to go to Israel, to train for 6 weeks with the Israeli Defense Force. Essentially, it was their national police, and this was encouraged all across the country for American law enforcement to go for a month and a half at a time to train with the Israelis, and Israel picked up the tab completely. Airfare, lodging, food, the training, everything was completely paid for by the state of Israel, which was probably just our money that we sent them that they were using to pay for this. But regardless, you know, I remember thinking then
that, like, costs a lot of money.
Why on earth? Yes.
Yep.
So 40 at a time, 160 a year, and this probably went on for 15 years at least. And first off, their laws are nothing. Their tactics are nothing. Like, to me, I was just thinking, like, well, that's what we need, right? Is a bunch of Israeli trained cops running around. That's real smart. And but that was a thing. So my point in saying that is, if they were doing that with the cops, I have no doubt that that's been done with the military for years.
Yeah. Well, and that was, I remember that program too, because I can remember there being a lot of talk about it being the militarization of the police. I mean, it's like, you're going to get trained by the IDF. That's a military organization, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I know at one particular time in the past that you weren't necessarily prioritized because of military service as far as being a Leo. You know, I mean, it was like not that they didn't want you necessarily, but it was like, these are peace officers. They deal with people not in a military fashion, and there were some associated liabilities with having military people in there, you know, because they would revert to training that was incorrect for civilian interaction, you know. So it was there was that as a result of it, and I don't necessarily think that was a bad thing, and I'm not saying that anything bad about, you know, military members. That's not the thrust of what I'm trying to say. But then you're sending Leos to be trained by the Army. It's like, they're not MPs, guy. You know, so there's a difference.
Well,
so.
And not just a military, but the Israeli military. I mean, stop and think about what we're seeing in Gaza, right? Like, we've heard the stories. You know, they're killing kids and they're burning and looting and raping, and that's where we're sending our cops. You know, that's who they're going to go study under. Yeah, I'm sure nothing bad will become of that.
Why? Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, it
leaves the person with questions.
Yeah, no doubt.
We're wrapping down on time, and I just wanted to, again, let's go over to ministry news and events. Newsletter, Dragon Slayer newsletter, working on that. Hopefully be printing that Monday, Tuesday. That's kind of the plan. Everything goes smooth over the weekend. Trying to get caught up, still trying to get caught up on stuff. And want to tell people that if they got orders in, there's been a few things that I have not been able to locate as of yet. Richard was one of he was running the mail room and taking care of getting orders and stuff out. And there's just a few things that I haven't been able to locate. So I apologize if you got some CDs or DVDs that are on order. I will get them out as soon as I can. But working on that, did get caught up on the rest of mail and correspondence this last week. And now working on the newsletter, and I'm excited about that. I think that it's going to be a, I think it's going to be a really good one. Do ask that you keep that in your prayers. There's a lot of hours and a lot of printing and a lot of equipment that makes that possible. If you're not getting the Dragon Slayer newsletter, well, I recommend that you do get it. And just shoot me an email, jason@sfaw.org, or you can write to it. And write to us at Scriptures for America, Post Office Box 766, La Porte, Colorado, 80535. And do appreciate your support to make these efforts possible, too. Our offering box is the mailbox, and you can send your support to Scriptures for America, and you can buy stuff on the store by going to sfaw.org. Also, we've got the water filters and some of the different products and stuff that we have for radio revenuers, and do appreciate that as well. Takes a lot of money to keep the wheels turning around here, and we do appreciate your support, and we're thankful for you out there that do support us. We really do appreciate that. Also, I guess we'll close out with Prepper Tip of the Week, and it's canning season. And I know that there's a lot of people that do that, a lot of people that don't. We always do quite a bit of canning this time of year, whether it's canning beans, making pickles, sauerkraut, you name it. We try to put it up and try to can enough stuff and try to do the rotation of stuff and, you know, making the salsa and stuff like that. I know both of you guys, you guys do the canning thing, and here we are. I really hate Walmart, to tell you the truth. But I was trying to find canning jars the other day, and I understand. It's like, I mean, there's places like, you know, where Tim is in rural Nebraska, and you know, a lot of places that I've been and visited, that's really your only option. That's your grocery store. That's your hardware store. That's where you got to go. And I get that. And I don't like the store.
No,
that's where I'm at. Either. But I was looking for canning jars the other day, and we reuse a lot of canning jars, but you end up breaking some, and you give stuff away that's in canning jars and stuff, and it seems like there's just never enough. And I went down to the Wally World and went in there, and sure enough, they had a boatload of canning jars, and they had an end section, and it was filled. They had lids, and everything was on sale, and it was good prices. I was really pleased with the prices. They had everything from gallon mason jars all the way down to half pints, and tons of lids, good prices. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago that there was a major shortage on that kind of stuff. I mean, you couldn't find it. And, you know, it was during the COVID and after, you know, the COVID, you know, shutdowns and stuff like that. It seemed like everybody and their brother was starting a garden and wanted to know how to can. And I'll tell you what, there's stuff's available. If you can get it, now's the time to, you know, get it at a good price and stockpile it. Cause I think it's one of those things just with inflation and everything like that. I don't think that the prices are going to be as good as they are now. I think they're going to be more expensive next year and the year after. And I think it's just going to go up every year. I mean, that's my two cents.
Yeah. Along those lines, Jason, in addition to getting the jars, you know, and of course the jars are reusable, you know, you put them up, you know, just check for chips and cracks as you use them to make sure that they're going to be able to withstand the pressure when you get ready to can again. But the one thing that I tell folks is when you do find a good deal on lids, first off, buy quality lids. A lot of the stuff that Walmart is carrying now, like the Equate brand, it's Chinese made. The sealant on it is just not where it needs to be. You'll find a lot of siphoning. Stick with the good stuff. Stick with, right, you know, Ball brand or like Lim, the company that's kind of known for like vacuum sealers and meat saws and slicers and that sort. They got a brand of canning jars called Roots, R-O-O-T-S, Roots. Excellent quality jars, excellent quality lids. Stock up on your lids now and spend the extra money and buy the name brand stuff. You'll be thankful for that in the future. Try to store your rings in such a way that they don't get rust on them. Yes. Make sure they're good and dry and hang those rings up. Because a lot of times people, especially in pressure canning, well, in water bath canning too, that rust has a way of working itself between the sealant of the lid and the rim of the jar, and you'll get failures that way. So if you think you got some bad rings, don't risk it. You haven't spent all of that work of toiling in the garden to get your harvest just to have it go bad up on the shelf when you're not thinking about it. Spend the money, get some new rings, hang them up, and make sure they're good and dry. And really the good lids, now's the time to buy lids. That's what I was going to say. They're plentiful out there. Spend the money. If you don't want to go to Walmart, there's lots of places online that you can find them. I like Layman's up in Kidron, Ohio. It's an Amish store. They always have a really, really good selection, and they keep that stuff in stock. So that's my two cents on canning. With this, only one more thing. If you're pressure canning and you're using something that is a canner that has like a rubber gasket or rubber seal, make sure you're keeping that conditioned with some petroleum jelly or some kind of oil, because you will have failure there as well. I like the All-American canners that are just metal on metal with a friction seal. That works well for us. But don't just take it off the shelf and think it's going to work the same way it has season after season. Make sure you're taking care of your stuff and doing a little preventive maintenance. That's what I got, Tim.
Yeah, I was going to actually bring up the pressure cooker seals. It's not a bad idea to have a spare one or two unopened.
Absolutely.
On the shelf. They're reasonably priced. It really bites if you do all, you know, the girls do all the prep work and suddenly the pressure cooker won't seal. Why, there you sit, you know. So spares are an important thing. Flats or lids, again, they're, and the other thing about flats is, this is what my wife tells me, and she's a master canner, but, you know, they're reusable. I mean, if you buy good quality flats, I know, and you're going to have to look them over, see, but you don't have to use new flats every time. We don't.
Mm-hmm.
And we get along great with it. The other thing I want to tell you is information in your canning books. Current canning books make it way more complicated than it needs to be. I mean, they literally make it sound like it's an impossible task, a daunting. And if you're interested in getting like some Ball or Kerr canning books, look for originals or reprints from, say, the 80s or so. You can get them on Amazon, or you can get them in different places. And actually,
they gave them away free back in the day. I mean, but they're going to cost you a little more than you'd like to pay. But, you know, once you have the book, you have it forever. So, or shop garage sales or different things like that for one. When you find one that was published in those dates, it's worth it. It makes it much more simplified, and it works fine. It worked fine for grandma. It worked fine for great grandma. So don't despair if you're reading a new canning book. It's like they're trying to put themselves out of business. Anyways, that's all I've got.
Well, we only
got
about
one quick comment. Oh, go ahead. No, I can make it 10 seconds. If you're on the internet and you're seeing these extension services, exactly what Tim's saying, you can find the PDFs. Don't use the new articles that are out there from the extension service. University of Nebraska, University of Georgia, find the ones from the 70s and 80s. There's PDFs out there that you can find. Use those, not the new stuff.
And I just wanted to say there was a lot of people that started gardens and gardening over the last 5 years, and I have seen tons of ads for people that have an abundance, overabundance of organic cucumbers, organic green beans, this and that, and they're basically giving them away too. So if you don't have a garden, that doesn't mean that you can. There's people, get on Marketplace, Craigslist, yeah, whatever. There's stuff all over the place. Now is the time where they're getting rid of it, and I mean you can buy stuff cheap.
You are listening to the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network with Pastor Peter J. Peters, made possible by the tithes and offerings of the faithful. If you would like to be one of those who help to get needed truths out to others, send your